Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new episode of the Dan Bushin Podcast, where each week I bring you some of the biggest names from around the world straight to your headphones. And opening up about his life in hilarious, emotional and revealing detail today is BBC Radio 1 breakfast presenter for a little bit longer, Nick Grimshaw. Now, the former T4 host and X Factor judge joins the pod to talk for the first time in detail about his decision to leave the iconic BBC Radio 1 breakfast show. I'm also going to ask him about those relationship rumours with Harry Styles. Did they ever really date? Got to get to the bottom of that one. We're also going to be hearing about his famous friends like Kate Moss and Adele. I just cannot wait for this one. Plus, Nick will be taking on Is This Your Life, putting me to the test and turn around and revealing the five songs that mean the most to him. Stick around too, because after the interview, I'll have all of your comments about some of our previous guests, including the brilliant American pop star Bebe Rexha. And if you want to listen to that interview or any of our previous A-listers, including Camila Cabello, Shawn Mendes or Meghan Trainor, then make sure you subscribe right now. But first, let's go in-depth and personal. Here's Nick Grimshaw. Nick Grimshaw, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Dan.
This is very intimidating, being in some type of audio studio with Nick Grimshaw.
No, because it's not hard, really. It's just talking. People are like, how do you do it? It's literally just talking. But thanks for having me. It's quite small in here.
Very small in my pod.
Yeah, absolutely. It literally is a pod.
It is. It's not like your big budget, multi-million pound BBC studio.
Yeah.
With cameras and whiz-bang lights and all of that type of thing. But it's good. No, it's good. It's nice and it's calm. So, Nick, what a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a mad few weeks because last week we announced that I was not going to do the breakfast show and I'm going to finish in sort of like autumn time, which will be 6 years. So yeah, it's been a mad few weeks because I've known about it and I spoke to Greg about it because Greg and I are going to swap, obviously.
That's Greg James.
Greg James and I are going to swap. So yeah, it's been a mad few weeks knowing we were going to make the announcement. Mm. And then it's quite funny when you make a big change to your life because it's quite life-affirming moment, isn't it? And you start thinking about everything. So it was quite stressy not telling anyone and going to Big Weekend and not talking about it and not telling anyone on your team. It was good to finally get it out there.
Because you probably just want everyone to know. And then actually, I always find when something like this has been announced, you're probably in one of the hardest periods because it's that no man's land between having announced it, but actually then your life goes totally back to normal. You've got these few weeks before anything actually practically changes.
Yeah, because we made the announcement on Thursday on the show, and then once we'd made the announcement, Greg came in and we had a chat about how Greg was feeling, and then we were like, okay, here's the news. And then we just had to sort of get on with the show and do Friday's show.
There wasn't a little part of you that's like, I'm going to go now. Well, we're going to swap now.
I did think it would be quite good to just do that and just be like, let's just swap straight away. But then I guess you've got to figure out what you're doing, what's your show.
There's corporate matters as well, isn't there? There's staff, you've got to look after them.
There's staffing, there's marketing, there's all of that. So yeah, it's going to happen.
It's not practical.
Do you know what's funny though? When we made the announcement, Greg and I were like, so it's going to happen. And then also it's like, when it's going to happen, we were like, I don't know. Like kind of September-y, October-y, August-y. So there's been no set definite date. So we don't know.
Well, I can imagine you've confused quite a lot of Radio 1 listeners though, because this is the millennial generation, who expect things to just happen immediately.
Yeah. People when I was in on Monday, I was like, I thought you were on in afternoons. already. People are like, well, I'm going confused now. It's like, no, it's not happened yet.
Now, by getting to 6 years, as you mentioned, you overtook Tony Blackburn to become the second longest serving Radio 1 breakfast host ever, which is cool and great. But relatively recently, you said you wanted to stick in there and do the extra 2.5 years and knock Moyles off his perch. So what happened? What changed?
Well, I think I'd like to, but then also I'd also like not to wake up anymore at that time. So I don't know. It's something that I really, really loved. And I think when I was asked that question, people were like, do you want to beat Moyles? I think you can't be like, no, because that looks like you want to leave. So I think that I'm not competitive really in like nature. I'm not like, oh, I really want to have like the record. I honestly, when I started doing it, I thought I'd do it for like 2 years or like 3 years max. So I don't know. It's one of those things that I really, really loved, and I've loved doing it, and I loved it this morning. And some days it's hard, and it's like, oh, it's a bit mad, this job. And some days it's like the easiest, funniest, most natural thing you can do. So, but I don't know. It just felt right. And I think that It was a real testament to it being the right decision. Like after I made the announcement on Thursday, I remember when I got breakfast, I was very like, oh, I'll check what Twitter's saying, or I'll Google myself and I'll see what the papers are saying. And I felt like really confident in that was the right decision. So I just didn't feel the need to sort of seek validation from anyone or anywhere. So I don't know, it just felt like the right time. And a few things happened that like spiritually aligned where it was like, this is meant to happen now. Like Fifi, who was on the radio with me, assistant producer, she got a new job a few months ago and she was like, oh my God, I'm going to leave breakfast. And she didn't know that I was going to. So like a few things that just sort of made sense and happened and it felt right. And
what were the other things?
The other things were like quite spiritual, Dan.
Go on. Okay. I'm open to it. I'm opening my
like,
mind up.
Listen. It was like, not sound like full like hippie like Ayo from Love Island, but like, listen. There was like a thing where it was like, we got this, me and Fifi follow this thing on Instagram and it tells you about like the moon. And we started following it as like kind of, it was quite funny to read out on the radio. And then actually we were like, hang on, we're into the moon. And the moon on the Monday was like, this week's going to be a new week for new changes, new beginnings. The key's been in the door. Now it's time to turn the lock. I was like, the moon is talking to me. Have I gone mad on breakfast?
No, but this is brilliant because it's the moon, the position. So what, yeah, it's about
it's
the
two
positioning
things.
Of the moon.
The moon.
So the positioning of the moon made you leave Radio 1
Radio
Breakfast.
One Breakfast Show.
No, I'm sure your bosses were delighted about that.
No, I just think, I don't know, it just felt right. I don't know what it was. And I think that I'd sort of been talking about it for a little bit, and I went and met like Big Boss Ben like last September, and it was like 5 years then. So I thought, oh, he's going to be like, it's wrap up time now, isn't it? And it was just...
So you were prepared for that? Because at some point, obviously...
Yeah. Well, it's not a job you do forever. It's a job that people don't normally do for long, apart from Chris, who did it for eight years. Like I think like Chris Evans did it for like a year and a half, and like Zoe Ball did like 3 years, and Sarah Cox did 2 years. And
it's a burnout job too. And it's a burnout job, and also it's a job for a station now in particular, unashamedly aimed at young people.
Yeah, totally. And it needs to be refreshed. And I think like I need a change and a new challenge and a break, and so does everybody listening.
Five.
Okay, Nick, so each week I ask my guests about the five songs that mean the most to them. So it could be a song that helped you become a star today, or maybe like from a song at a party you attended, perhaps. And so recently, actually, we had Kem Setane from Love Island. He spoke about how James Arthur was the theme to his and Amber Davies relationship. And James Corden told us of his love for Snow Patrol, while BB Rexha shared her stories of Destiny's Child. So now, Nick, it's your turn to get your five. What is your first song?
Okay. This was, by the way, the hardest thing that I've been asked to do.
The hardest part of the podcast.
And I was like going through it and I was like, oh, I can't pick five. And everyone was like, just pick five. So the first one I've gone for is the first gig that I ever went to. My godmother took me to this gig when I think I was 8 or 9 years old. And I didn't really know who the band were, and I loved the song. My first gig was The Prodigy when I was probably 8.
That's such a cool first gig.
I know, and in hindsight, my mum's like, how did we let you go? Oh, Nicholas. So I've gone for Firestarter. I listened to the record the other day. Like I listened to The Fat of the Land, the album again, and it's still amazing. And it's such a record.
A good album. How old are you now?
I'm 33.
So I'm 35. So that's smack bang in our generation.
Yes.
Great first choice. Okay, what song two?
Song two, I thought I'd go for the first song that I played on Breakfast, because I thought it was fitting roundabout now.
Very.
So the first song that I played on Breakfast, I remember having to... I wanted to play something that I thought would set the tone of what I wanted the show to sound like musically. So I went for Jay-Z and Kanye's Paris.
crack. That's crack. What cause so hard? Brothers wanna find me. That's crack. That's crack.
I wanted to play something that was really great and by two big pop stars, but by two pop stars who maybe weren't as played as much. Like, Chris didn't play loads of music, and I wanted to make sure that we played loads and loads of music on the show. So,
and have you thought about what your last song might be?
No. And I kind of don't want to because it's too. I hate being asked. Sorry, mate. I hate being asked song questions because I listen
sorry.
To like. Well, only because I listen to so much music. You know, when people are like, "What's your favorite song?" I can never answer that, and it's so annoying when you ask that question because I always ask it. People like,
but it would be your
song?
Choice.
Yeah, it'd be my choice. I don't know because I don't need something like emotional, like I've died, and also I don't know. I'll probably just play my favorite song that week. So like whatever I'm loving that week, I think because at the time Jay-Z and Kanye Paris, like I absolutely played to death, and I'd just been to see them in London, and it was one of the best live shows. So I don't know, like it's quite hard talking about music weirdly as a DJ because I listen to so much music and love so much music. It's hard to pick like those defining records.
Good, well, you must be loving this feature, Nick, as I ask you about song three.
Literally every day, people are like, "What songs do you like?" I'm like, "All songs." Song three, I'm gonna go for the song which really reminded me of school, and I remember it being like my leavers do, and we went to the leavers do, and I remember like me and a few of my friends rapped, it's really embarrassing, rapped Dr. Dre and Eminem's Forgot About Dre. Nowadays everybody wanna talk like they got something to say, but nothing comes out when they move their lips, just a bunch of gibberish, and motherfuckers act like they forgot about Dre. So I thought we'd have that because I was trying to think of songs that
that's
were important
still quite
to
cool
me.
Though my Leaving Do song at school was More Cheeba's Rome Wasn't Built in a Day.
Oh, that's quite cool though.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I was going to say that's really uncool.
Yeah, no, I like that.
Song four.
Song four, I've gone for a song which always reminds me of my brother and my sister, who I think were very important to me in my musical taste and what I wanted to do in my life. So I've gone for Blue Monday by New Order. How does it feel?
And Nick, which song completes your five?
I've gone for a song which my friends, they just got married and they walked down the aisle to it when they got married. And I was like, livid, that was the song I wanted to walk down the aisle to. And I've gone for Sylvester, You Make Me Feel Mighty Real. When I was little and I used to think, oh, when I'm an adult and I go out gay clubbing, this is what I'll listen to. And lo and behold, it was true.
And now you just save it for your wedding.
I know, and then they stole... Well, they didn't steal it because I'd not told anyone. But when they walked down the aisle, I was like, oh, I wanted that.
So in September at this meeting, did you put the sort of steps in place to prepare to leave?
Not really. Ben was like, I like you. We like you at Radio 1, but we worry if you do breakfast for any longer, you're going to be like one of those people that's like, I have to leave and sit down and go somewhere to be quiet for 2 years. So he was like, over the next few years, we're going to make that decision. Like, you know, we will and you will between us. We'll figure it out. So he was really great about it and gave me a few options of like, you could either do till like next September and you would have done it like 6 years, or you could do it till like Christmas, or you could do it till like big weekend. Like, go away, have a think about it. And what do you think about swapping with Greg and going on to do afternoons? So I don't know. I thought it was a great option. Like, I definitely didn't want to leave. Like, I love being at Radio 1. I love working there. And I love doing a daily show. And I love having like that routine of a show every day that leads on and having the same people listen every day. So I didn't want to leave. And I don't know. It seemed like the two things I wanted to do when I was little were like breakfast and drive. Like, they seemed like the most sort of inclusive, fun shows on the network. So we made the decision, I can't remember exactly when, but Ben told me about the Tony Blackburn record. So he's like, so when it gets to like the 20th or something, or whenever it was big weekend, was I beat Tony Blackburn's record. So I was like, well, we're not going to do it at big weekend. Like, hang on, Taylor Swift, I've got some news.
Oh, that would have been so cool.
Like, Taylor, shh. So I know, and there was like, I spoke to Greg about it, and we were like, we didn't want to do it before, because then at big weekend, everyone's just like,
you're leaving.
And then that's kind of not what big weekend's for. It's for like everyone in Swansea. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of not the right time. And then we were going to do it like on the Monday, and then the Monday was when I beat the record. This is it, because weirdly I'd booked it off ages ago and it was just a pure coincidence that I was off, so I actually missed the day that was the record breaker. So we did it on the Thursday, and it was kind of up to me what to say and what to do. And I met with Greg the day before and we were just like, I think we should just be very honest about it and say how I feel and have a little chat about it and then got Greg in for a chat.
And tell me about the personal toll of working on Breakfast Radio. I mean, I obviously know a tiny, tiny bit about it working on The Lorraine Show for ITV, but I don't have to do that every day. But I mean, getting up at that time of the morning every single day drastically changes you physically, psychologically, what you can do with your life. So explain some of that, because obviously before you got this job, you were Mr. Party Boy.
Yeah.
And you just can't be, can you?
No, you can't. And it was like, I was doing a nighttime show and I was like 27 when I got the job. And I think now I'm 33, I'll be 34 in August. Like, your priorities of partying vastly change because you start to get like hangovers and anxiety and you're tired for 3 days as opposed to like 30 minutes. So I don't know. It was a natural change anyway, because I was sort of growing up on the show and I wanted to do it. Like, it was my dream job and I wanted to be good at it. And I found it hard if I was going out all the time, which I was, to go and do the show. So I thought there's no point for going something that I love and that I've always wanted to do and finding it hard for the sake of like being pissed. Like, it seemed like a stupid thing to do. So I don't know. You do grow up and it's relentless, and it's not that I'm down there digging a hole or anything in the road and it's like that, you know, arduous work, but it is hard to wake up and be in a good mood every single day for what will be 6 years. It does take its toll. You just get tired and it's exhausting, and you give away, I think, a different part of you. Like, it's quite emotionally exhausting and draining, and you don't sort of give yourself space to sort of actually live your life, because if you're like sad or emotional or whatever, you kind of got to just park that for a bit because you've got to go to work the next day, and you can't be like, I'm a bit grumpy about the way someone's treated me.
Yeah, because you're waking people
up. So you don't want to go to like moan because you've got like one of the best jobs that exists. So it's really fun, but it can be hard. But I remember when I started, I spoke to Terry Wogan about it and he was just like, you know, it's a weird job. And you shouldn't ever beat yourself up if you wake up and you feel like you're not in the mood, because you feel ungrateful. And he's like, you're human. Like, that is the most normal reaction. You cannot wake up and be like, yay, Rita Ora's here. So he was like, if you're feeling like that, know that that's very, very normal. And I always remember that advice was like, because no one's really given me great advice apart from Terry Wogan.
Is this your life?
So, Nick, is this your life? I'm going to ask you a number of questions. You've got to let me know if they're true or
false.
Your first
broadcast
on BBC Radio 1 Breakfast was September 24, 2012.
Yes.
Such a long time ago. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
I can't believe it was that long ago now.
I can't believe it's that long ago.
Feels like yesterday, really.
I know. It's 6 years, nearly.
Kate Moss has given you the best piece of advice you've ever received.
Kind of true. I mean, that's true. She did give me some advice, kind of by accident, because just before I started Breakfast, I went to Ibiza with my friend Amy, and we're like, well, we'll have a relaxing side in Ibiza. And then when we got there, like, Kate was there. So we were like, oh my God, hell on legs, that one. So we hung out with her, and I was talking about, you know, starting Breakfast and stuff. And her advice was, like, if you are hungover, be hungover, which sounds like terrible advice, but I think her advice was just be honest.
The way she's lived her life.
Yeah, like, she's been sort of unapologetic, I guess.
Okay, this is so funny, because that's not actually the piece of advice I thought it was going to be. Because I heard, tell me if I'm wrong, that she once talked you out of getting a Bart Simpson tattoo.
That is true.
And if you'd done that, that would have been
badness. She still brings that up as well. Like, it was my friend's birthday and she got a tattooist round, and everyone was like having tattoos, and my friend whose birthday it was loves tattoos. And then I was like, I want Bart Simpson. And Kate was like, don't do that. You regret that. But I was like, I love The Simpsons.
Brilliant. You had a cameo in the Disney film Frozen.
No.
Correct. Actually, your cameo was in the Disney animation film Wreck-It Ralph.
Yes.
Your English teacher at secondary school appeared on Stars in Their Eyes.
False.
Really?
Yeah. But close. what happened was I got in trouble at school because my English teacher said they were going on Stars in the Rise, and I thought it'd be funny to say who has meatloaf, and I got thrown out of my English class because she was like going to watch it.
But she never actually did it.
No.
You have a pet pig.
False. I have a pet dog called Pig.
So it's close.
Yeah, close.
And your other dog is called Stinky Blob.
Yep.
If you weren't a successful radio presenter, you'd want to be a butcher.
True. It was true. I've probably changed my mind since.
I read this and I did wonder if you were having a joke with the interviewer because you announced that you loved playing with raw meat.
Yeah. Like when you were little and your mum would be cooking. Mm. Like I loved it. And my sister did as well. And we were like both into it. I don't know why. And I loved
it. It's like Play-Doh.
Yeah.
You were once mistaken for Harry Styles' dad.
True. In a shop, and the lady was unsure who he was and definitely didn't know who I was, but she knew he was famous, and he was in the changing room trying something on, and I sat outside waiting. I guess kind of quite dad that, isn't it, to wait outside? And the lady was like, where do I know that guy from? I was like, oh, he's in, I think X Factor was still on. Oh, maybe it just finished. I said, he's in that band One Direction. She went, oh, that's where I know him from. And she's like, he must be ever so proud. And I was like, me? She was like, you must be proud of him. And I was like, yeah, I guess so. And she's like, are you his dad? I was like, oh no.
Devastation.
I was like, nine years.
The possible worst thing that could happen. All right, well, you're doing very well so far, Nick, but I'm hoping to trick you here.
Okay.
You manage 428 albums and you'll feature 1,000 albums everyone says you should listen to, but we only have time to play one track, so here it is.
Snappy title. I mean, I've no idea. I'm gonna say true.
Yes, no, it's not. You only managed 369 before moving to Radio 1 Breakfast. You went to Liverpool University and studied communications and media studies.
True.
But is it also correct that you failed your final year and presented on the studio radio station Icon instead?
Yes, basically I kind of had started working when I got to my final year.
It sort of worked out for you.
Yeah, my mum and dad were like mad at the time, but I wanted to go into music, so I ended up working at a management company and a record label already. So then I was like, I don't really want to go back to learn about macroeconomics.
No, and I don't think it's necessary these days to get
not
a degree.
At all. Not at all.
Some of the most successful people I know have no degrees.
Yeah.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Obviously, with Radio 1, there's always going to be people who have a strong view either way, and people who are going to be critical or people who are going to comment on the move. I guess the main, as you say, on the whole, this was a change that was received positively and it was well managed and it wasn't controversial because you're staying with the station and someone's swapping and all of that type of thing. But I guess the one criticism that came up is that has Radio 1 got too tame now?
Right.
You know, like back in the day, you would have breakfast hosts, like when you started, you know, who were wild and sort of brought a bit of a sense of anarchy to the station. And some people saying, you know, this choice maybe feels a little bit safe. I mean, I love Greg personally, and I think he's a brilliant DJ, and I always have. So on a personal level, I'm actually really delighted for him. But what do you make of that criticism of it being, you know, a safe choice?
I think it's quite an odd one. I think Greg is, like, so good at his job and someone that loves his job and someone that will kill this show in a good way, not getting negatively, like, he's going to murder
this
show. That's
a great headline there.
Greg James is going to murder this. No, really, he'll kill it because, of, you know, he's such a radio
fan. You're speaking in millennial slang.
I'm speaking in millennial slang. It's contemporary youth argot, guys. like, he will love this job and, like, he'll be so good at it. And he's someone who, like me, loves radio and has always wanted to do it. And I'm dead happy that it's him and we're friends and he's going to get to do it, and they've not just sort of binned off me and Greg for like some stranger. But I don't know. I honestly didn't read anything. So it's the first I've heard of it. But I don't know. I think it's a weird criticism because I think that is a part of my personality and it is a part of Chris Evans' personality. And I think that, I don't know, that we weren't like, let's go mad because we've got this job. It was like, we've got this job, let's not be mad.
Yeah.
So I think that they were natural things. And I think that Greg will be amazing. I don't think you want someone that's been out all night doing it. It's not very good when you've been out all night.
And the other thing that always people in the radio industry always talk about, the showbiz industry, although I'm sure there'll be a lot of people listening who've never even heard this word mentioned before, is something called radars, right? And what that means is that radio has this really weird way, very old school way of measuring how people listen to the station, which, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think sometimes they're actually like still filled out on paper.
Yeah, it's really
weird.
So people
listen to the radio, this little group of people listen to the radio, they fill it out. And your rage has been up and down over the last few months because I think they went up earlier in the year and then went down in May. And Radio 1's big argument over this whole thing is that actually we actually want to lose listeners because we want to take the station young, which is something I've always found a little bit strange, but they would say this is something we've been told by the government to do. So what's your, now that you're exiting, what's your take on the whole ratings thing?
Well, like you said, it's such a weird way to do it. Like my friend Amy got one of those books.
Never known anyone to get one.
And she was growing up in America and she was like, what is this? And like sometimes you just like, oh, I'll just do whatever. And
How much did you pay her?
She used to do when she lived in America. Okay. And she'd like, when she was little, and she'd just like fill it out. And she said, literally, it'd be like the news. It'd be like, this radio station has 1 billion new listeners. Because it's just so random. But I don't know. It's when I started, my job was very different to what Chris Miles' job was. Like my job was to like told by Ben, by the BBC Trust, like, we have to get younger. Mm. That was our remit. Like, we have to get younger. And like all media, like, radio is changing from what it was. So when people are comparing, like, what it was like 15 years ago, it's kind of a stupid thing to do. Because,
well, we live in a very fragmented media market. I mean, if you even look at TV ratings, of course they're going down.
Yeah.
It's inevitable because there is so much more choice.
Well, like, telly and radio are competing with YouTube, which is, like, for entertainment, like the best thing that's ever invented. So you'd be like, oh, I like Ariana Grande. I'll type that in and I can watch all of her videos. Let's see her be interviewed by one of 20 people. So it's quite...
Or Spotify.
Yeah, they didn't exist.
People program radio themselves with no ads and no presenters, which some people want, or podcasts.
There
is more choice.
So it's a funny thing to compare it to. So I think that Radio 1, like those figures, they've always fluctuated. I think they've... do quote me because that's what we're doing. But I think they've always between like roughly between like 5 and 6 million. And I think that
I love that someone in an interview.
Don't quote
saying,
me.
Don't quote me on
this.
We'll
get the fact, won't we? We'll get the fact. But I can't remember the fact. But they've always like fluctuated. But I think that now like it'd be silly to sort of, you know, rate Radio 1 on those figures.
Well, when Chris Moyles came in, and I mean again, I actually love Sarcots. I think she's an amazing, amazing DJ. But when she came in, the ratings had slumped so low that he was brought in to bring Radio 1 back to a mass market. Whereas you guys still have 5 million viewers about. Or listeners. Sorry, 5 million listeners.
Viewers. They're just watching the radio.
But there are cameras now, though.
Yeah, and there's cameras.
There are cameras in all the time.
We did this thing where I think we had like 3 pop stars or something. And between the 3 videos, there's like 20 million viewers. Yeah. And there's 10 million people a month on YouTube on Radio 1. And there's like 10 million people a month engaging on social media. So it's kind of, it's a funny thing to be like, they've gone down that much in 15 years. It's like, yeah, because you're comparing that to something that was before people went on the internet.
Firsts.
This is firsts now. So you just have to say the first thing that comes into your head about all of these moments. The first album you bought.
I remember getting loads of music from people. I can't remember the first album. I can remember the first single First single I went to go and buy was because it was a Bjork single because the cover was like iridescent, sort of like 3D and stuff. And I remember it was like, remember when you used to get HMV imports? They imported
it. Very expensive.
And I really wanted it because it was like a great cover, but it was a bad song. I didn't like the song. I think it was that Hyper Ballad.
Oh my God,
Bjork.
I loved that song.
Yeah, but I didn't like it at the time. I think I was like 11.
Oh God,
it was a racket.
So
in hindsight, good songs.
See, I would say now it's a record. The music she produces. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
but
the flute.
Then it was okay.
The flutes, yeah.
The first person you were starstruck by?
Probably David Beckham. I met David Beckham because I grew up in Manchester and he played for Man United, of course, and from a big, big fan of Man United fans and who went every week. And I met him at like the training ground. We had to like go and meet. We didn't have to. We wanted to go, me and my friends, and meet all the players and everything. And I remember meeting David Beckham and it felt like he was a proper superstar.
And I still and you know him like, properly now, though, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and I still feel like that when I see him. I can't talk to him. I've got zero to say to him. I just go, hello, David.
Your first celeb crush?
Probably David Beckham.
First time you got drunk?
I think it was like my 17th birthday or something. And, oh no, it wasn't. I'll tell you when it was. It was when I was 17 and my brother took me to the pub and he went with all his friends and they were all a lot older than me and I thought I could drink the same as them. And I think I managed like 3 or 4 pints of Stella and was like,
you were gone.
Blackout drunk.
Your first email address?
Oh my God. I have no idea.
And your first interview fail?
I once interviewed NSYNC and called them the Backstreet Boys.
That is basically as bad as you can get.
Or the other way around. Like, I genuinely can't remember.
It's as bad as you can get. One more controversial BBC Radio 1 issue. This 4-day week.
Yeah.
Thoughts? I mean,
my
great for you.
But really great for me. My
slightly controversial.
Well, I thought, like, if I'd been doing The Breakfast Show, like, 2 years, I'd be like, oh my God, livid. But now I've been here like 5 years, I'm like, I'm so tired. Yeah. please let me
So it wasn't something that you guys wanted, it was something
no,
that
it was like,
put
it was just,
on you.
Yeah, it was just like, this is happening.
But so even on Drive, you'll be doing a 4-day week and then there's a different team that come in Friday,
Yeah,
Saturday,
the whole
Sunday.
Day on Friday. So it'll be weekends on Radio 1 will be like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Even though Fridays is a week. I guess it's a different...
So you get a 3-day weekend?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I know, it's fun, that, isn't it?
It is.
I'm really
But you
excited.
Obviously do a lot of other work.
Yeah, I'm going to do other stuff, and I'm going to do... I've been in a few different things that I want to get into and a few other things that when you're doing breakfast, you sort of have to let slide just because you have to put your whole life and energy into it. And, you know, we don't just finish at 10. We've got to figure out how we fill 3.5 hours the next day when there's no guests, so...
Yeah, that is what people... That is a big thing that people forget. It obviously has to be a huge amount of preparation that goes into doing a show like that, especially given some of the stunts.
Yeah, and you have to read everything and watch everything and cross everything because you can't be on the radio being like, oh, I've not watched that.
Absolutely. Actually, there was one more controversial BBC type issue I needed to ask you about. The gender pay gap, Nick, has become such a huge thing. And you were one of the people, I believe, who got your salary released.
Yeah.
Which is quite a difficult thing because it means that everyone in your life now knows that you're in this bracket, a particular bracket of pay, which was for you £350,000 to £399,000. But the big controversy over it was probably not how much people were paid, but how few women there were on the list at the BBC. What's your personal take on it? Especially given, I guess, and there was some criticism of this, Charlene White, the newsreader on ITV News, said that, you know, great for Greg James, but here is a white male replacing a white male.
I think it's crazy that there would be a gender pay gap anywhere. Like, I think it's such a crazy thing in 2018 that people doing the same job would get paid differently. Mm. Like, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really, really is. And, it's amazing that it's all come to light because I don't think that you can justify paying people doing the same job.
So you were okay with your salary being released because it was for the greater good?
Well, I mean, I think if it can...
I mean, not that you had a choice, I guess.
Not that you had a choice, but I think if you could help, I mean, it's just crazy to think that... I can't remember who it was, but they were doing the same show. And they were like, maybe it was on the one show. And I was like, that's mad. Like, if I was doing T4 and I was doing my job with Makita or Alexa.
Well, there was BBC Breakfast. There
and
was
I was knew
disparity.
That you were being paid differently for the same job.
Yeah.
I'd feel uncomfortable.
So you would want to get paid the same as your female co-presenters. I mean, it's an interesting one, though, because obviously you were on The X Factor.
Yeah.
And probably, Nick, the female judges may have been paid more.
Oh, 100% more. 100% more. But that's a different thing, because it's like, that's not...
It's the same job.
Yeah, but it's not really, because then that's their specific...
I know, but that's,
like,
but that's why I have a little...
Like a
exactly,
funny...
but that's why I have a little bit of a problem with it, you see, because I don't think you can just say in the entertainment industry you're going to pay people 100% like from like, because For example, there are people who come in. I mean, you mentioned Clara Amfro. She came in as a brand new presenter. Yeah. You know, Radio 1's given her her massive break. Of course, she's not going to come in on the same money as someone who has been around on the station for years and years. Scott Mills, for example.
Yeah.
So, and likewise, if you were a new guy on X Factor, so you probably got less than Cheryl Cole or Cheryl Tweedy, who was someone that they thought would bring in loads of viewers because she'd done it before. Do you see what I mean?
I guess when fame enters it, like Cheryl and Rita's worth is like 20 times mine, so they get paid.
No,
more.
That is ridiculous.
It is, though. They're like brand names.
But I did want to ask you about your year.
It's like presenting with like Coca-Cola and Purcell.
I did want to ask you about your year on The X Factor. Yes. How was it?
Do you know what? It was fun. It was stressful. And when I said that I was not doing breakfast and I spoke to my friends about it, they were like, you do need to like have a rest. And like a lot's happened. It's been a big chunk of time. And one of them, my friends, was like, when you finished that show, like it was, you know, hard. And like people were hard on me as well. And like people were like, who's this idiot? And she's like, you know, normal people would have finished that show and like reflected on it and had time. And she was like, you woke up the next day and just went to work at 5 a.m. So I don't know, like when I never really had
did
time to process it.
Did you find it bruising? Because it was the first time in your career. I mean, you have had a dream career and you were loved by the public and you've been loved by the media as well. It was the first time in your entire career when you received criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was, I don't know, if I had not been doing the radio, I think it would have hit me harder.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because you'd have been sat at home and thinking like, oh my God, everyone hates me. But I think doing the radio, I don't know, is sort of an outlet because you could sort of talk about it and talk about the show. And my memories of when I think back about it, my general feeling really is it was funny and you can't take those things seriously. Do you know what I mean?
Did you regret doing it?
No, I don't actually. I think it taught me a lot and I think it was fun. Like, I honestly had fun when I was doing it. Like, sure, like, when it came out, not everyone liked it and people had things to say, but that's why that show's good and that's why I wanted to do it. But also, I think with that show, like, I've sat at home and be like, I hate her.
Yeah.
I don't think I necessarily hate that person. No, that's just the nature of that programme.
But you and Simon Cowell didn't walk away mates.
We weren't, like, friends before. We didn't know him, and then when I worked with him on the show, like obviously we'd hang out and I really really got on with him, and he was very very funny and he's such an interesting character to be around. And then after the show I've spoke to him and I've like exchanged texts, and now he doesn't have a phone, so we've had to exchange texts through a third party.
Or he does email
and they read them out to him and then he quotes them back. So I'm not friends with him. I've not seen him, but we've spoken and I sent him like messages and he's messaged me and stuff.
Lasts.
So the last person who made you feel nervous to meet them?
Maybe I don't know. I sometimes get nervous in like at parties when it's overwhelming. So I went to my friend's wedding on Friday and I get sort of nerves of like, who you don't know who you're going to be sat with or stuck with or anything. But we had the nicest time. But I don't know. I think it's more mass things that you get nervous for.
Last album you loved?
I really loved the Jay Huss album and I've listened to that so much this year. I really, really loved that. Last album that I loved. ASAP Rocky's new album, Testing, I listened to.
And last album you hated?
I don't know how I feel about the Kanye record. I think it's sort of, there's bits that I like in it, but then there's bits where I feel like it's just a racket for the sake of it being a racket.
Last present you were given?
Oh, my friend Fran got me a really good Nike hoodie that I really wanted, and I was on holiday and I couldn't get it. You know, like when everything goes, and she got me that on Thursday.
And the last text message you received? Nick has got his phone, so this is genuine.
This is genuine. It was from my friend Katie, and we were doing a thing this morning who said, worked out this thing where if you were defined by what song was number one when you were 14, and she got in touch to say that hers was Phil Collins' Easy Lover.
That's disastrous. What's yours?
That says it all. Mine was No Matter What by Boyzone, which I don't know what that means. Like, you're meant to find the hidden sentiment in the record, but I don't know what that means.
Obviously, you have the best contact book in the business, which is one way that you have made Radio 1 breakfast yours, really, because you've got the biggest names in the entertainment industry now coming to you. And there's a great story that you told previously, and I wonder if it's one of your highlights of being on Breakfast, when Adele actually approached you, I believe, to say, I want to premiere my new music, which, of course, the whole world was like anticipating on your show and do the first interview with you.
Well, yeah, she didn't like call me and be like, hello, I want you to come on. And we do text and, you know, like we
yeah, she takes messages.
Message from time to time. But when she came in, she was like, I'm really happy that I get to, I think she said this on air, I'm pretty sure she did, where she came on and she was like, you know, I'm happy that I can play this with a friend of mine. Mm. And I don't know, I think there's maybe, it's because I think a lot of those friends that I've made in music are people that I met when I was interning in music and was working in clubs and DJing and flyering and stuff. So they know that first and foremost, I'm a music fan and they can sort of trust my opinion and stuff. And it's been nice to sort of grow up through this like weird world of like entertainment with people that you know and connect to. So yeah, a few things like that. I think with like Florence as well, it happened and Adele, and it feels really nice that they want to come on the show. And I think it's like a testament to Radio 1 as well, that they want to come on and they know that Radio 1's a place where you break a record and where you can play it. So,
and it is. Yeah. I mean, that is where the power of Radio 1 remains.
Totally,
even in this world where so much has changed, it's still the place.
So if we could have Adele release a song every Friday,
it'd be fine.
We'd be fine.
And of course, your other friendship, which garnered so many headlines over the time that you were on Radio 1, was of course with Harry Styles from One Direction.
Yeah.
To the point, Nick, where you became so talked about that people assumed that you were a couple.
Yeah.
And it was something that everyone would say, that Nick and Harry were dating, were in a relationship.
Yeah.
What's your take on all of that?
It's kind of crazy because we met and we really got on, and I don't know if it's because we were both Northern and had quite a similar sense of humour. And I don't know, I think because he was down in London and away from like Northerners and friends and family, like we just all ended up hanging out together and getting on. And I think that people assumed because I was gay and he like wears like floral shirts that he must be gay. And they were like, oh, they must be going out with each other. But I don't know, it was something that we never actually like discussed together.
But you never were?
No, not at all. So I don't know, it was an odd thing to happen.
Must be odd for the whole world.
It wasn't very weird at the time. It's weirder now, like when he came in to talk about because at the time you're just sort of getting on with your life and you're doing the radio and you're just hanging out and you're like, whatever. But it was weirder when he came on to do the solo stuff and I started doing like my Harry research and like writing questions and stuff. And when I like Googled him, I was like, this is actually
you do not want to Google Harry Styles, Nick Grimshaw.
Not the Tumblers
good.
Anyway.
Not good, definitely not. And of course, like finally, you know, your love life, you've said that actually you've always found it hard because of the Breakfast Show and the hours of the Breakfast Show to upkeep sort of a normal relationship. So do you think this is your time now? Are you going to settle down and try and find a man? Or do you have one maybe?
No, I don't. And I think it is the show. It is exhausting. Yeah. So like you want to go to bed early, you want to have your dinner early. So if you meet someone and you get on and you have like a day at the weekend and you'll hang out the weekend, if they're like, what are you doing on Wednesday? And you're like, do you want to go for dinner at 9? And you're like, no, because I will have been asleep for half an hour. So I don't know. I think before, when I was younger, I think I was looking for somebody to sort of immediately fit into my life and make that work. And I guess that necessarily, as you mature, you realize that's probably not an option. So maybe you do have to like go out once night and be late and maybe go to like another part of
but
town.
But you can do that now.
And you can do that now. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I think that I've reached a time where I don't think I wanted a boyfriend before. I think I wanted like one maybe as like a accessory or something. Whereas now I think I'd like want to like someone to be nice to me.
Do you believe in marriage for you? Do you see kids in your future?
I don't know. I think so. I've got two dogs. So when the dogs are great, I'm like, I would love some kids. It'd be like this. And when the dogs are annoying, I'm like, I can't deal with this responsibility. I think so. I think I like having like all my friends have started to have babies and they just start to get married and stuff. I'm not crazy about marriage, but I think babies, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. How did I do?
Is that it?
Yeah. Well, nearly. You've got one more challenge. You've got one more little challenge.
Okay.
Turnaround.
So this is called Turnaround.
Okay.
And this is when I get nervous because it's the point in the podcast where you get to take control.
Okay.
So you have a minute
okay.
to ask me as many questions as you want. So it could be about you and like your own career and I have to tell the truth.
Okay.
Although I will just tell you, every single person who does it asks which celebrity I hate.
Oh, that's...
So it can't just be
because
I've said the same person time and time again.
Who's been the best smelling celebrity that you've encountered?
I actually think it was Rihanna.
What'd she smell like?
Smell incredible. Just
weed.
Like, you know, when... No! No. Not then. Not back then. This was a few years ago. No, she just smelled beautiful. And she'd just come off stage, actually,
well. Still
and
was,
and still smelled amazing.
Dermot O'Leary.
He's very conscious, isn't he?
He smells
male
rich.
Grooming.
He smells really, really rich. Have you been in any celebrities' houses? And who's got a dirty house?
No one has a dirty house. But actually, recording the podcast this time last year, I had one of my most mortifying experiences of my career when I was interviewing Robbie Williams at his home. Uh-huh. And he was sitting on one side, it was really long. I sat on the other side. It literally collapsed the moment I sat down.
Have you ever met someone and then you thought, oh, I won't fancy them. And then when you've interviewed them, you're like, oh my God, fancy you.
Yeah, I have actually.
Ours was Orlando Bloom, like the whole show. Was like, oh my God, really? We're in love with Orlando Bloom.
Do you know what? Maybe Ed Sheeran.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you don't think you're ever going to fancy Ed Sheeran, do you? And then actually, he's such a character. I mean, I'm not saying I want to sleep with Ed Sheeran necessarily, because obviously that's not going to happen.
There's the headline.
But, you know, he's such a charismatic person.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God,
and
I can really
talent.
Understand why people fancy you.
Yeah, and it's talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
Sorry. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having me.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I really did. Just talking about myself. I loved it.
And no music.
And no music.
It's weird. My favourite part of that podcast with Nick was him making the revelation that it was something to do with the moon being in a particular place that made him leave Radio 1, the breakfast show. He was worried about telling me that. I could tell. Maybe he knows I'm not as open to the spiritual world as him, but I loved his honesty. And also great to finally just hear that whole Harry Styles thing cleared up. I just had to ask, you know, did anything ever happen? Because it's all over the internet that it did. And unfortunately, guys, unfortunately, all of you people involved in that Harry Styles conspiracy, no, nothing ever went on between him and Nick Grimshaw, finally cleared up. Of course, if you want to hear all my other A-list interviews totally for free, including with some members of One Direction like Liam Payne and Niall Horan, then you just need to subscribe right now for free, because all of those interviews are there, including most recent podcasts from the likes of Shawn Mendes and Meghan Trainor too. And of course, we had Bebe Rexha on recently. She's one of my favourite pop stars in the world. She opened up all about her Me Too experience when a producer had come on to her in a studio. And she had such an empowering message about that. Got lots of great feedback. Ryan Bartrop, oh, we love Ryan. He tweeted to say, I adore Bebe Rexha. Great podcast, Dan Wooten. Thank you so much. Claudia at Big GMEZ on Twitter said, the part about your single life made my year. Now, you have to listen to this because it's too rude for me to repeat. But let's just say Bebe had an interesting reason for not being with any men. That's all I'm going to say about that. Stanya said, just listen to the whole interview. And I have to say once again, I love your personality and opinion so much, Bebe. You are such an inspiration for me. And for all the Rexes out there, don't forget that we love you so much and have always got your back. Well, that's very sweet, isn't it? Really, really like that. So thank you so much for listening to my interview with Nick Grimshaw. Of course, you can listen to Bebe Rexha right now, and we'll be back very, very soon for another edition of the Dan Wooten Interview. So please make sure you subscribe right now and leave some feedback for us too. We love getting that in Apple Podcasts. Thank you.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.